Tonight on the Inside Line F1 Podcast Live, we dive deep to understand the media's role in shaping up the mindset of fans on sporting matters. Then we take a look at a few case studies on how a few drivers are portrayed and the impact of the media on the same. And of course, we speak about Nikita Mazepin. Why did you think otherwise? Plus, more information about our special tie-up with a very special brand for a very special race as well. Keep listening for more information, but let's get into it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, George Orwell, the legendary author and a man who just seems to have the keys of political satire right within his palms, very famously once quoted that the people will believe what the media tells them to believe. Now, we've seen this happen in the world of politics, in the world of sport as well. I mean, propaganda seemed to be a big thing back in the day, and it's not to say that it's not happening now as well. But in the world of sport, it's slightly less serious as it is in the world of politics and in the world of war or whatever you might like to call it. But in Formula One, it has reigned very, very supreme over the past few years. And we've seen so many instances where teams and drivers have just had their perceptions in the media, in the public eye, basically, being changed so dramatically just by the way the media portrays them. And that is what we shall dissect today. We shall dive straight into it, crack it on, and see what's what. And first, it'll be myself, Somer Arora. As always, ladies and gentlemen, you might know me from The Driving Force on Hotstar and also from the iRacing broadcast. And I'm from the iRacing broadcast, I'm sorry. And I'm joined by my co-host, Kunal Shah, who used to be the ex-marketing head of Force India and now works as a motorsport consultant for the VS Sport Network. And the first question I have for you, Kunal, is how do you always manage to get such an amazing guest onto our show? How do you do it?
Thanks, thanks, Somil. Before I introduce the guest, I must say I never expected to hear political satire as something that would come out from an 18-year-old super host that we have in you. So, you know, thank you for bringing that up. But yes, on this show, we have a special guest. His name is Chetan Narula. Hi, Chetan. It's great to be talking Formula One to you. And before we actually start talking, here's a quick introduction to Chetan. So Chetan, above everything else, is a friend of mine. I've known him for about, you know, over a decade. You know, we've reported on motorsport several years ago. At the moment, you know, he's a specialized cricket presenter. I would say you would see him on DD Sports and All India Radio. He's a commentator. He's an in-studio guest. He also loves reporting on football. So for, you know, all you guys following the EPL and IPL, he's pretty much the expert to go to. And his motorsport connection is something that I'm very proud to read out. One of the few books that have been published on Formula One is actually done by Chetan. His book is called History of Formula One, The Circus Comes to India. It was before the inaugural Indian Grand Prix in 2013. So it's fantastic to have you, Chetan. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kunal. That was quite a vivid introduction, but thanks for that. And Somil, thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to interacting Formula One with you guys.
No, likewise, it should be a very, very fun experience. We shall speak about the more serious stuff that we're here to speak about in a short bit, because Kunal, we've got some special news and we've been building it up for quite a while. And today it's not one, but it's two of them.
It is, actually. And I'm going to read out one of them, Somil, so I can let you do the second, which I hope is not political satire, okay? But for all our viewers from India, we've got a special tie-up with Puma Motorsport, where you get discounts on their motorsport merchandise range. We're going to leave the discount code in the description of this episode. So feel free to use the code and, you know, you get your discount when you go make your purchase.
Exactly. There is that. We're also having a special competition for the Monaco GP. More information on that coming soon. But there are big, big vouchers on offer and you would love to take part. We know you guys. So more information on that on our socials. Check out the link in the bio or the description, depending on whatever app you're using to listen or to watch this. But the second news, Kunal, we are coming up with our own Pits to Podium newsletter. And you can subscribe to that. You can just visit the links down in the description to sign up. Exclusive articles, more videos, some wacky Formula One stories and content. Some really good stuff for you over there in our newsletter. And we certainly hope you'd subscribe, because we've got some positive reactions so far. No bias, but let's see how it goes. I think it'll be fun to have you on, dear listener and viewer. Should be fun. But let's get down to the role of the media. And I think essentially, Chetan, it's what we do, right? For our business, we try to show the sport in a good light, or rather at least in the light that we want to show it in the world of sport, right? But it can have such a major impact. And we've just seen it happen every so often. We've seen so many cases where a certain team or driver may look good just because the media has portrayed him to be so. I mean, a clear case of that, for example, would be the difference that we see between one Lando Norris or a Nikita Mazepin here.
Absolutely, Samuel. And before I go on to answer your question, the connect that Kunal had mentioned, he had presented me with a Force India jersey a long time ago when he was working with Force India. So that's also our Formula One connect. And I'll be the first ones to enjoy this Puma merchandise discount that you're going to give, because he knows, Kunal knows that I love motorsport merchandise. And now coming to answer your question, yes, it's been a while since I've been working in the media industry. And the fact that you've said that, you know, painting a picture is obviously what we do. And yes, nowadays the media tries and paints the picture that it wants. And whether that's sport or politics or music or movies or whatever it might be. However, I think there's a fiduciary responsibility for the media to present the right picture, whether it's sport or any other field. It hasn't always happened. And it's not just in Formula One. It's in cricket, in tennis. I mean, there are different characters. That's what sport does. It brings out different characters. Now, the responsibility of the people reporting on it is to probably concentrate on the sporting side a bit and be as neutral as possible. But it certainly never comes across all the time. Let's say if I have to say in today's times, maybe 70 out of 100 times, it doesn't come across like that. And it's a bit sad. And I'm not just talking about Formula One. There are so many pertinent examples from different sports. And over the course of this episode, perhaps we'll delve into it.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts, Kunal? Because it's a serious issue, isn't it? That what you often read, what you often watch, what you often listen, it can really shape up your mindset and your mentality on that. And so many cases, so many examples come to mind where we think of how the media can sway away. And then again, why does this problem happen in the first place? Why does the media do it? I mean, it's not like the media is some external devil sitting right at the side on its kingdom chair and whatever, wearing a crown or something like that. It's people like us. We're working in the sport. And why does it happen in that way? Why does the media's opinion and the perception have such a huge impact on what the people think in that regard?
You know, the easiest way to answer your question is by putting a question back, right? Uh-huh. And we may not know the answer to the question, but the question is Nikita Mazepin, because, you know, the trigger of this subject came in from the whole Mazepin episode and then how Lando Norris came up in support of Nikita Mazepin and sort of changed the whole direction of the chatter, right? Yep. So the question is, you know, is Nikita Mazepin perceived to be a bad boy in Russian media? Yeah. Right. And we'll never know that because we sort of don't get access to, or we wouldn't know what Russian media to sort of follow. But Somil, I think both, you know, what you and Chetan have just pointed out is true. Media does drive portrayals, does drive perceptions of drivers and specifically in Formula One. But like Chetan said, yes, you know, I wish that the focus would be more on the sporting aspect of the athlete rather than the more social or the off-track aspect of it. But, you know, in all of this, I think social media has a really large role to play as well, right? And I know Lucien will pounce on to me for, you know, talking about Nikita Mazepin time and again, but I'm just going to use that as an example, right? I think, you know, Nikita Mazepin, definitely with his social media antics created a lot of negative perception and it did him no good with the fact that he literally spun out a couple of corners on his opening lap as well, you know. So here's a case of social off-track negativity that also sort of was further compounded by the on-track bad performance. And, you know, in such cases, I guess at the moment, we've just painted a picture that we've all seen on track as well as off track.
Exactly. And on the complete opposite end of the spectrum has to be one Lando Norris, who has used not just the traditional forms of media, right? Not just the journalists or the TV channels or whatever, but now coming up with what one may call the more contemporary ways of using Twitch, of using Instagram, Twitter to his advantage. And I wouldn't say that Lando Norris has not gotten good results. He's gotten great results, but it's just amplified by the fact that there's an air of positivity around him. What makes him so likable is the fact that he's catapulted his image of sorts into a very beautiful light by using social media, isn't it, Chetan? That now the traditional methods are just one aspect of it. Now you can just have control over your own narrative through what you do on social media. And Norris has just used that wonderfully.
I think social media is becoming a very, very important tool, not just in the way the world affairs, not just sport, the world affairs in general are perceived, but also in terms of the connect that people now are forming with different personalities. And when I say personalities, it could be movie stars, it could be politicians, it could be sports persons. The role of the media is being redefined. And I think the last 1.5 years where we've all sat at home in the lockdown, it has been drastically redefined because thanks to social media, now everybody has access to these celebrities and sports stars straight through their Instagram and Twitter. And we, the media people, sometimes were intermediaries as to what they were saying in press conferences or their shows. Now it's directly being consumed by the fans. So I think it's been a drastic change. However, there are no lines drawn in social media. There are no border controls in social media. I mean, you look at football right now, they're really going through a racism problem with regards to social media. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect, you mentioned Nikita Mazepin and Lando Norris. In Formula One, let's just say, in Formula One, there's always this narrative that they need somebody who is a feel-good person or a feel-good personality, and at the same time, they need somebody to paint a villain, which happens in most sport as well. I remember, and I think Kunal will also remember, because this was a time when we used to be actively involved in Formula One. I mean, he still is. I was a little more involved in covering Formula One, and that was 2008-2009. It's not as vivid as Nikita Mazepin or Lando Norris, but it was a time when Kimi Raikkonen was at Ferrari. 2007, he was the world champion. 2008, he did not have a great season. Felipe Massa was challenging Lewis Hamilton for the championship. And from 2009 onwards, there was talk that he would walk away to rallying and Fernando Alonso would come in and take his spot at Ferrari. And this whole thing just blew up where they were trying to paint Kimi, because he's a very silent character. He's not a negative character. He's just a neutral character. But there was a lot of reports in the media about Kimi being not a Ferrari person or not a proper Formula One person, you know, that way. Don't go by his social media, how much social media or how much the fans love him. I absolutely adore Kimi Raikkonen.
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't, really? But at that time, because Fernando Alonso was riding this positive wave, he had to come into Ferrari. He was being seen as the next savior of Ferrari. This whole story was playing out in the Formula One circus or the Formula One world, where Kimi Raikkonen was being painted in a negative light, which is, if you can even imagine it, possible. And Fernando Alonso was being put in a positive light. So I'm not surprised it has happened with Mazepin and Lando, but I would judge Mazepin's credentials just on his Formula One racing, which we don't have much sample of, obviously.
Two cars.
But yeah, just to say, I'm not going to say that what he did off the track was right. But again, I think his racing should just be judged on what he does on track.
You're absolutely right. And you touched upon a very beautiful subject there, Ferrari. Ferrari historically have had some interactions with the media. It used to be, not actually, I'm not sure if it still is, because we don't get much information from that camp now, but it used to be a tradition at Ferrari, at least until Ross Brawn came in, where every single morning they had a whole bunch of Italian newspapers and global around this thick, and the executives at Ferrari would be reading it with their morning tea, searching through every single newspaper for anything that the media had said about Ferrari. And if they said something negative, you know the deal. I don't even have to say what's going to happen. We know the infamous story of I think Ferrari using Ford as a leverage to get a higher deal from Fiat back in the day, around 1962, 63, around that time. Then there's Ferrari's completely changing the perception of one John Surtees, because he was about to drive for them at Le Mans, and then there was some disagreement, and John Surtees became public enemy number one in Italy for some time. They've had that sort of thing as well for a long time, Kunal. And now, same with Fernando, right? The moment, as Chetan lovelily mentioned, lovelily isn't a word, incredibly mentioned, that Fernando Alonso was being portrayed as the savior, the god that Ferrari needed to come up with another championship. The way it panned out in the end, Alonso was public enemy number one at the end of it. It's crazy to see how things work out in that space.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And, you know, that's what drives the circus. It's the whole political angle, the whole angle that media portrays. Also, a lot of these teams are very big super brands in the world of business altogether. And let's remember, it's also what these brands want stories about their drivers to go out as well, including all the rumors and all the backroom stories in the paddock and so on. But, you know, just to sort of bring the whole Nikita Mazepin thing back in light, right? Let's remember, he's just another Formula One driver who's come with a truckloads of money, right? So he's a pay driver. And it's sometimes, you know, and at this moment, he's making, you know, Nicholas Latifi look good in a Formula One car. Let's be honest about that as well. You know, I'm being totally unbiased in and unbashful in my approach. But, you know, I think, yes, parts of what, you know, Mazepin is attracting is a little unfortunate. But I also think he's sort of got the whole mix of, you know, the whole portrayal business wrong, because he has to sort of look good in three places, okay? And all three of which he's probably failed in yet. First is, like we spoke about, the, you know, him in the racing car, especially in Formula One. That's, we've had very little exposure of that, right? The second, I would say, is him in general media, open media sessions that we get to attend as media, right? And unfortunately, you know, I must say, I've been through a couple of them as well. And he's not the most likable personality, right? And that sort of works against him. And the third, which I think is more in his control, which also he sort of failed to master, is social media. He could have very well used his platform to portray himself and his personality in a way nobody else is currently portraying. And, you know, suddenly he's the bad boy of Formula One. And, you know, I've asked this question before and I'm going to ask it again, but I don't think that there is space for a bad boy in Formula One in current times.
But the question is, Chetan, I'll ask this to you. Does it really matter to him personally, right? Because we speak about perceptions, we speak about what people think, but at this, there's this very core feeling with athletes, and you may mostly see this with, I think, professional fighters in the UFC and whatnot, that they're not bothered about what people think. Maybe he could be having that as perspective, right? Maybe that drives some people to do better.
It depends, really, Somil. You know, it depends from person to person, personality to personality. It depends on experience. I want to put the example of Jose Mourinho, who he's one of the greatest of all time football managers. He is not liked in the English media. He can do anything right, and they'll criticize him. If he does something wrong, they will criticize him. Basically, anything he does, he is criticized for it. Yeah. He can't really win with English media. So does Jose Mourinho get affected by it? No, he doesn't, because he has that sort of aura. He has that sort of personality. More importantly, he has that sort of CV. He has multiple Premier League titles, Spanish titles, Portuguese titles, Italian titles, Champions League. He's won it all. So he doesn't care. Now, you look at somebody like Nikita Mazepin, the guy has just had, what, three corners in Formula One. Yes, and as Kunal mentioned, and everybody knows, he's ultimately a paid driver. Yes, it's not like you just get out of bed and you become a Formula One driver, even if you're a paid driver. No, you go through the junior levels, you junior racing and everything. So certainly he's done something right in those junior levels. But again, the problem is that the timing of it is not very good. I mean, you look at you look at what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement that has encroached into Formula One. Lewis Hamilton is making sure that's happening. Racism is a huge talking point. And then suddenly comes along a Russian rich kid who buys his way into Formula One and then, you know, does what he did. It doesn't look good. And as Kunal said, is there a place for somebody, I wouldn't say evil, a bad boy in Formula One? Maybe, maybe not. But again, like I said, you would want to judge him on his racing, of which we haven't had a big sample yet. But the problem here is with how Haas dealt with the situation. When they say we dealt with it internally, just go out and tell the world how you dealt with it. Did you deal it with an iron fist? That, listen, boy, what you did was wrong. If you repeat it, you're out. We don't want your money. Or just because he brings a lot of money onto the table, they were like, okay, you know what? Just all of us, let's stay silent. Let's stay away from social media, and it'll go away on its own. So a lot depends on how Haas dealt with it. And to my perception, and I've been following Formula One for a long time, I don't think they dealt with it particularly well.
But Kunal, they had to, right? I mean, there was serious threats of the team shutting down if they didn't have that money. And Gene Haas has constantly said that, yeah, I don't know, maybe this Formula One thing isn't for me after all.
You know, Formula One, the more the money, the faster you go. And definitely the Mazepins have brought the money that Haas need. Hopefully the performance comes. But, you know, let's not turn this only into a Mazepin bashing episode.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we've bashed him, you know, for a fair number of episodes now. And, you know, I'm sure he would have wished that this was a doubleheader and he would have gotten into the car the next weekend and sort of corrected this whole perception about, you know, him not being able to sort of, you know, handle a Formula One car. Yes, the Haas is unstable, but, you know, at the same time, you know, he's had several years of experience in junior Formula. He should have known what cold tires do at the start of a race and, you know, how heavy fuel loads would sort of define how the opening laps would be and several other things, right? But also comes to my mind, Roman Grosjean, how he sort of came in as a crash kid into Formula One, was crashing everywhere. He got that one race ban for his crash in, you know, crash at the Spa-Francorchamps. But he sort of tried to rebuild his image, his career, by getting a few podiums while at Lotus, went up against Kimi Raikkonen and did fairly well, I would say. And, you know, even though he was forced out of Formula One at the end of last year, the perception still was that Roman Grosjean was this ultimate crash kid who's crashed less, but he still had the talent on a good particular day. And It's not too much of a surprise that, you know, a crash literally just ended his Formula One career.
And the irony of it, it's that final crash that changed his perception in the media completely.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it's a game of life and death, wasn't it, at that time?
Yeah.
And the media, obviously, everybody was worried with that crash. It was, I think, one of the most horrible crashes we've seen in the last decade. Jules Bianchi is one that comes to mind. After that, I think this was one of the most horrible accidents. It's a very fair point with Roman Grosjean. I think there's another driver who should be really careful about media building a narrative, especially this year, if he doesn't do it. And I'm talking about Max Verstappen.
Oh, yeah.
You look at the first race, and now we're talking hardcore Formula One, aren't we? You look at the first race, he had the faster car. He had fresher tires, or still better tires in those last 5-6 laps. He could have overtaken Lewis Hamilton at any other part of the circuit. He just went exactly where he could go outside the track limits, and then he had to give it back and ultimately took a lot out of his tires and ended up not winning the race. So with a faster car, I don't know what happens this year. Maybe Mercedes develop and find out an answer and they come back. But if they don't, if Red Bull finish the year with the faster car, but Max is not able to win because of the mistakes that he makes, the media is going to get onto his back really, really quickly. And that was a couple of years ago when he was making so many mistakes. He was crashing all the time, or just, you know, driving off the track and overtaking, you know, unabashedly, and everybody had to pounce on him. He had that negative perception for a while. And then the next year he calmed down, got a few podiums in, got his head down, because he was driving alone at number three for that matter. But I think this year he has to be really, really careful, because in a world championship fight, it can get really ugly. And somebody like Lewis, if it gets ugly, he is a master of mind games. And Nico Rosberg is somebody who was really good at mind games for that one year that he managed to win the world championship. But there was so much talk in the press about both of them. Especially when they clashed, was it Spain, Kunal?
Spain, yeah.
And I think Max has to be very, very careful this year.
That's a good point, you know, because Max Verstappen, really, when he came in, It was. Have you seen that Gordon Ramsay meme where he just hugs a lady and says, "Oh, you're lovely." That was the kind of case with him. Then the crashes happened, and then the perception changed. But it's lovely to see the way he's transformed. In fact, but same with Max as well. Crashing and that old stuff comes up to Grosjean as well. Grosjean had that crash in Baku. Fault of his own. Yes, it was his mistake. Let's agree. I mean, it was not Ericsson who hit him. It was himself. And the media spun it off in a way to seem like Grosjean said that Ericsson hit him. But it was his engineer, you know. It was not Romain Grosjean who sent that team message. Yeah. That accident happened. People pounced on Grosjean. All the memes, all the drama. It's funny to a point. Beyond a point, it just becomes tasteless. Then you see what happens to George Russell at Imola 2020. And the reaction was a complete opposite, Kunal. Like black and white totally in that case. What's your thought on a situation like that when George Russell was just protected, he was hugged, he was petted, like, oh, George, you're wonderful, you can never make a mistake, it's all right, stay strong. And then you compare to what happened with Grosjean a few years ago.
So I'm going to answer that with 2 points. One is more factual and second is a bit more of a judgment. Uh-huh. Okay. The fact is, George Russell was pardoned for probably what was his only mistake in the two seasons he's raced in Formula One. True. And he's been pretty error-free. Yes, you could attribute that to the fact that, you know, he races pretty much at the back with nobody else there. There, you know, Sundays is not when his main pressure is. His main pressure is in Q1 to get into Q2 and so on. But let's keep the facts on the table. He made no mistake than, you know, till the Imola 2020 behind the safety car when he crashed.
Did right? Austria with Magnussen when he was around the outside, he just went to the gravel. That's a minor one. That's not anything significant. But
okay. Like I said in the previous episodes, never argue with Sommel's history, right? But I will not do that. But the second is more of a judgment, right? Is, let's remember, most of us consume English media, right? George Russell, the next British driver ready to take Sir Lewis Hamilton's mantle, take the sport forward in the country and so on. And, you know, just goes back, you know, is Nikita Mazepin painted as badly or as well in Russian state media? And that's something, you know, that comes to my mind when it comes to George Russell, even Lando Norris, you know, for that example, British driver being presented world over by British media, F1 TV commentaries run with Sky Sports. And, you know, I've been in the business of broadcast just the way, I mean, you guys are the guys on the microphones. I'm the guy behind the camera, right? And hero building is one of the oldest tactics of driving viewership, right? And that's what, you know, Russells and Norrises of the world have benefited, much like Verstappen has benefited from, you know, the likes of Ziggo Sport and so on as well. And which is why with the whole Hamilton Sebastian Vettel battle, it was just the German press that was probably, you know, up talking Vettel's performances, whereas, you know, the English press was just looking at all his mistakes.
That's a very good point. The Chetan, they're compelled to, right? Because that's what their audience is. They've got to keep the ball rolling. Yeah.
And exactly. I just wanted to say that precisely because there's this element of English media, and I've seen that as a cricket journalist as well. They have their mainstream media, but at the same time, they also have their tabloid media. So the tabloid media, and there is no, as a cricket journalist, I have traveled to Australia, South Africa, different parts of the world, sometimes as a Formula One journalist as well. And nowhere I have seen this sort of a variance where you would have two sports journalists, and anybody who's listening from the English fraternity, please, I apologize. I'm not bringing you down. I'm just giving my observation. The fact that in the same press box or in the same paddock, you would have two English journalists. One would be a serious journalist, and one would be a tabloid sports journalist. I'm not saying he is not a serious sports journalist, but the thing is, in a tabloid story, the angles are different. You want to read more about what Lando Norris did right or wrong, or, you know, you want to present that sort of way, whether he's a hero or a villain.
Yeah.
Same thing with George Russell, whether he's a hero or a villain. So you present that side more, whereas in a serious sports story or a proper sports story, I don't know what the better word is, it would be more about what they're doing on track or off track, whether George Russell can actually replace Lewis Hamilton. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, anybody can step into Lewis's car and win races. I mean, doesn't work like that. I mean, Valtteri Bottas can't beat Max Verstappen in the Mercedes. Only Lewis Hamilton can. There's your prediction for the year, by the way. coming back to the debate. So English media is, and whether it's cricket, football, Formula One, rugby, tennis, any other sport, English media is always bifurcated along those lines. And more than any other nation, you will find it in English media, whether it's for good or bad. It's not for us to judge, but this is something that you will find wherever there is English media covering sport.
Chetan, it's a lovely thing that you mentioned about hero building, right? And we must discuss about this just very slightly before we move on to the next bit. But Kunal, it's a human curiosity, right? To know what your favorite driver or your favorite star is doing, where they're going for a vacation and all that. But I know that generates the bills because people want to see that sort of stuff. So it helps you pay those bills off because you attract more advertising money. The whole circle flows on. But has it diluted the whole idea of media, that media is supposed to be a fair jurisdiction that shows things as they are, black and white, and not does not go into personal lives and all that? Because we know for a fact that at least in football, it has a huge difference. A certain English tabloid, Daily Mail, has a reputation of going into the houses of the football players and just showing, yeah, you know, they have a Bentley, they live in a 12-bedroom mansion, or a cricketer has had this house, or Lewis Hamilton has bought a mansion in Monaco. Question is, does it really matter? But I know they're compelled to do it because that's where they get their money from, because it's a human curiosity. You want to know those sort of things.
You know, Somil, it's about also what the readers want. And that's what, you know, media companies do research time and again about, you know. And it's not, you know, even one bit of a surprise that coverage extends beyond just the professional lives of these athletes. Hmm. It goes into social, it goes into, you know, in all the societal elements that, you know, we all get interested in. But, you know, at the end of the day, we are all humans, the fans as well as the media put together. We all come with our biases and our judgments.
True.
And, you know, for anyone listening in, when you are forming your judgment, you know, be a little less harsh, I would say. Let it be about what you see is what you get. And, you know, if you don't like that, you're okay with sort of stepping away from that personality. But don't fall into this whole narrative that is constantly being built, you know, on biases. And I think that's also what the world is sort of trying to get into with the likes of social media, like, you know, Chetan pointed out at the start of the show, that you get the more direct connect with your athletes than ever before. And, you know, I always wonder how big would, you know, the personalities of the past have been, say the likes of Michael Schumacher or Ayrton Senna or Alan Prost, if, you know, social media was still as rampant, you know, back then as it is now. And, you know, interesting. We'll never know, but just a thought out there.
Exactly, yeah. There's that. And speaking of narratives as well, Kunal, the driving force. Not the driving force. That's the show that I did. Drive to Survive.
Yes.
That has changed a few things, hasn't it?
I don't like Drive to Survive. I mean, I watch it every time it comes out, but then somebody who follows the Formula One season, you're just able to pick so many gaps in the show. And I understand that they are trying to get the new audience into Formula One, but come on, you have to tell the new audience that Williams was one of the greatest constructors ever.
Yes.
In 10 episodes, how could you not mention that? So Frank Williams is not, and his family, Claire Williams included, are not in charge of Williams anymore. How could you miss that? I mean, even if you're getting the new audience in, you have to tell them about the history of the sport. And that is my one major complaint. I think the editing is really poor. I think the cuts are really poor. The stories, and the thing is, if it was being constructed throughout the season, you know, first three races, you'll have two episodes, then another three races, another two episodes. If they did it like that, you know, you would understand the cuts and the misses and the way they edit it. But they do it after the end of the season. Yes, they shoot at a particular team at a particular race, so you don't know what could happen. But at the same time, I think it could be narrated better. It could be edited a bit better, especially, I mean, what did you make of it, Kunal? No mention of Williams at all.
You know, no mention of Williams and several other missing stories, I would say. I think
throughout the season, yeah.
Yeah, George Russell at Sakhir was missed out as well. And again, I'll be honest, I couldn't see beyond halfway through season two. So I haven't even started season three. But, you know, I understand that it's I'm not the target audience for the sport. But I completely also get what you're saying, that I think the narrators have a bit of a commitment to the sport and the stakeholders that have built the sport. And the commitment to the viewers to actually, saying to sort of narrating the great pieces of history that, you know, we've had all along as well. It's not just about, hey, this is what happened in 2020 and here are some behind the scene political battles and so on. Right. And I would say it's a responsibility that they all have, much like we all do.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I mean, you're building this new series and you're bringing new audience and you want, and of course, the new audience, you look at social media, they all love Sebastian Vettel. And Sebastian Vettel is somebody who idolizes Nigel Mansell, who's won with Williams. So how does it feel when you're not even talking about Williams? I know I've taken it a bit too hard, but that's what I'm trying to say, that the history of the sport is important. Yes, you're building new audience, but that doesn't mean that you will negate a particular team or a particular point. I think it can be done a lot better while keeping the interests of the new audiences in mind.
And Gambit has thankfully come onto a YouTube chat and has reminded us that thankfully they are going to cover that storyline in season four. But come on, 2020, that was the year when it happened. That was the year when he should have done it. Just baffles my mind. But finally, guys, one point that really comes to mind, and this is going to be a real big historical bomb. I have to frame this in the best possible way, but it's so intriguing that the Batman quote, I think it was Joker who made that quote, that you either live long enough to be the hero. I mean, you either die a hero or you live long enough to be a villain.
Batman.
That was Batman? Yeah, that was Batman then.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. In the story of Ayrton Senna and Alan Prost, and Ayrton Senna, a legend of the sport, a true hero, the kind of aura that he had. Many say that he just had that while driving. And I can only read. And I have to believe that because what a man he was, right? But it's what's sad is Alan Prost, for new fans coming in, being portrayed as, oh, he's that villain shtick who really didn't like Ayrton Senna. He's the man who's putting our hero down. Now, Alan Prost was not like that. Alan Prost was, I mean, if you, big flex. I've been lucky enough to meet Alan Prost, and he's just literally the nicest person in the world.
Absolutely.
And regardless of who you are, I mean, I was literally a nobody when I walked into the paddock and I asked him, and he gave me his time very politely. And he's a four-time world champion, definitely one of the best racing drivers of all time. Smooth as hell is what people used to call him. His gearboxes used to last almost two more races than any other driver back in the day. But because of the heroism of Senna, which needs to be there, Senna is a hero. But it's just sadly portrayed Alan Prost as a villain. And it just kind of, not technically, not completely, but for anyone new coming in, that is what the perception you would get, right? Alan Prost is anti-Senna. But it's not that way. He was a very good friend of Senna. And the documentaries, just to add up to the heroism, kind of miss that element, don't they? And it's a shame. Again, going back to the point that how media perceptions can really change things as a whole, or the way media documents it.
Kunal, you want to take that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, you know, people who are narrating stories have to follow us, you know, a regular structure of a villain and a sidekick and a hero and a superhero and the likes. And that's just unfortunately the way we are all brought up, right? Right from all the stories we hear from childhood, all the books that we read from childhood, all the movies we see, you know, you quoted Batman, Sawmill, and the number of times it's been remade on pretty much the same characters and storylines. And I love Joker, but, you know, he's always going to be the villain of the Batman series, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, all we can hope for is just more evolved story listening, not storytelling, because that has to follow the structure. Hmm. And, you know, let's hope that we are able to evoke such an action from our listeners and our viewers that there is more to than what meets the eye each time you read a tweet from media journalists, or each time you see an episode on Netflix. And, you know, it's probably easier to dig up the truth now than it has been ever before in history, given the access to the internet and pretty much everything else that, you know, that allows us to cross source all the stories.
I would just like to add there that I think storytelling is also a vital part of it, because and I'll refer to the example of Prost and Senna, because Senna is always, obviously I love and have the deepest respect for Senna, he's always built up to be the hero. You will never hear anything negative about him. Is it because he's no longer amongst us? Maybe that's a reason. But again, you have to, when you talk about Prost, and I was also fortunate enough to interview him at one of the races. I think it was Singapore Grand Prix in 2013. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But I was fortunate enough to have a chat with him. One of the kindest people in the paddock. He's always happy to give you your time, always happy to answer your questions. But at the same time, what I'm getting at is storytelling is important. I'm not saying that Senna should not be built up as the greatest ever hero of Formula One, but it's important to see Senna versus Prost or Schumacher versus Hakkinen or this year Hamilton versus Verstappen in the light of things that are happening, not in light of things that are or have happened or are happening off track. You know what I mean? So I think storytelling and the people who build up the narrative, and I think this is something that we've established through the episode, that people, whether it's Netflix, whether it's people in the British tabloids or otherwise, people who build up the narrative, I think they are most important and they have the most responsibility.
No, you're absolutely right with that. And at the end of the day, it falls to us. It falls to us about how we share the stories, how we narrate this, and how we literally paint a picture, because that's the picture that everyone sees. But the only thing that, if I can say, as an enjoyer of the sport, has to be, you have to make up your own opinions. Don't just believe in what you read or what you see, even if it is what we are saying, right? You make up your own mind. You build up your own opinions. Naval Ravikant, the amazing angel investor, said, be an optimistic contrarian. That's the best way to put it. But finally, gentlemen, your thoughts on this, your closing thoughts, in fact. Chetan, we'll start with you first.
Like I mentioned on the subject, we have the, as storytellers, as people who cover cricket, Formula One, football, whether as Kunal said, in front of the camera or behind the camera, we have the greatest responsibility in terms of bringing out the right message, bringing out the message that is balanced, especially in the days of social media now, where there's just so much information and almost everybody has the license to troll or abuse. I think it's important to provide the right balance and the right storytelling. We have to find the right story to tell.
Your thoughts, Kunal?
Well, I would say for me, the balance, I'm going to just put a mathematical number to it, right? I would say for me, any athlete, I would say 90%, maybe 95%, would just be down to his or her sporting credentials and his or her sporting achievements. And after a point, just leave the personality aside. We all have a dark side to our lives, and that's not the only thing we want to portray to people and talk about and reflect upon. We all want everyone to know our good sides, right? So when we get to know the good and great sides of these athletes, just enjoy them for what they are. And, like I said before, just keep looking out for the truth.
Exactly. Be kind. Be nice. Just make up your own mind and look at the good side. But folks, I hope you enjoyed that rather different episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Chetan, genuinely, thank you so much for being a part, because those insights, those stories, and really love listening to you, man. That was awesome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much as well, Kunal. It's almost always that we come out here and we have good discussions in the world of Formula One. And I hope, dear listener and viewer, that you enjoyed it as well. And if you did, more stuff is coming your way rather soon. Our race week content is going to come up for the Emilia-Romagna Made in Italy Grand Prix. I hope that's what it's called. Along with other Inside Line F1 podcast live episodes too. And don't forget our deal with Puma.
Absolutely. And don't forget our F1 newsletter as well. Lots of things, in the pipeline. And Chetan, thanks once again. I really hope to see you resume your great reporting on Formula One as well. So hopefully this season we are able to bring you back. I know you're busy with the IPL and, our viewers are going to see you on a TV show, any day soon enough. But thanks so much for being on our show.
Always welcome. And anytime you can just let me know and I'll be happy to join you guys.
That's kind of you, mate.
Ah, good fun. Again, folks, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening to the show.